The voice you are about to hear belongs to a fictional character. The events do not. They are unfolding across Yorkshire and the Humber today. This is Chloe's story. In one of the most deprived constituencies in the country, social care work remains undone, while trained carers cannot find sustainable employment and care homes struggle with chronic understaffing. The resources exist on both sides of this equation, but the funding structure keeps them artificially separated. Here is Chloe.
I never planned to work in care. It chose me, really. When I was 16, my gran developed dementia, and I left school to look after her. Those 3 years taught me something I've never forgotten. The difference between someone who cares about you and someone who's just doing a job. The way she'd relax when I brushed her hair in the same rhythm every morning. The way she'd remember my name longer if I held her hand while we watched Coronation Street. I kept a photo of us from that time on my kitchen windowsill for years after she passed. I spent the next decade working retail, but that experience with Gran stayed with me. In 2019, I finally did something about it. I completed my care certificate through a charity program in Chapeltown. For the first time since leaving school, I felt like I was building towards something that mattered. I knew exactly what kind of carer I wanted to be. My first proper application was to anchor Hanover Group's care home in Seacroft. The manager was lovely during the interview, said my references were excellent, that residents would benefit from having someone with my background and patience. Then she mentioned the wage, £9.50 an hour. I tried not to let my face show what I was thinking. That was barely above minimum wage. After deducting travel costs and national insurance, I'd be taking home less than I earned stacking shelves. I tried Leeds City Council's in-house care team next. They were enthusiastic about my application, said they desperately needed people with my experience. But when we got to the contract details, they explained that their fee structure from central government meant they could only offer temporary contracts with no guaranteed hours. We'd love to offer you something permanent, the team leader said, but the funding structure just doesn't allow for it. We're having to bid for hours, week by week. Determined to qualify properly, I enrolled in a Level 2 Health and Social Care course at Leeds City College. The coursework was interesting, and I was good at it. My tutor said I had a natural understanding of person-centred care, but halfway through the course, everything changed. In a meeting that should have been about arranging my placement, the course advisor told me the placement programme had been suspended. The funding just isn't there anymore for proper training placements, she said, looking genuinely sorry. The care providers are saying they can't afford to take on trainees. They're barely covering their existing staff costs. I asked if I could arrange my own placement, maybe approach care homes directly. She shook her head. It's not about individual arrangements, Chloe. The providers need to be paid to supervise trainees properly, and that money has been cut from the college's budget. Without that, they can't meet the placement requirements for your qualification. I decided to try anyway. I approached Bupa's Roundhay care home directly, explained that I was willing to work unpaid initially if they could provide the supervision I needed to complete my qualification. The manager, a woman who'd clearly been in care for decades, listened patiently to my proposal. I wish I could help you, she said. We benefit from having you here, and frankly, we need the extra hands. But I've had to freeze all recruitment. Leeds City Council's fee rates don't cover the cost of employing additional staff, even at minimum wage. We're already operating at a loss on every resident whose fees come through the council. Walking past the college's health building one afternoon, something caught my eye. Through the windows, I could see entire computer suites sitting empty. There was a notice board by the entrance advertising unfilled spaces on care courses, health and safety training, first aid qualifications. All the infrastructure for training was there, unused. That same week, I was talking to my neighbour Sarah over the garden fence. She mentioned that she used to work at the same care home where I'd been trying to get my placement. but had to leave when her hours were cut to 16 a week. Couldn't afford to keep working for that, she said. But I miss it. There's nothing like seeing someone's face light up when you remember how they like their tea. I started paying attention. In my street alone, I knew 6 people claiming universal credit who had care experience. My friend's mum, who'd worked at Seacroft Hospital for 20 years before taking redundancy. A woman from the community centre who'd cared for her disabled son and knew more about moving and handling than most qualified carers. My former colleague from the shop, who'd left to look after his father and discovered he was brilliant at it. The pieces were all there, just artificially separated. Empty training rooms, unfilled course places, experienced people who wanted to work in care but couldn't afford to live on care wages. Care homes desperate for staff but unable to pay sustainable wages because the fee structure assumed care work should be cheap. I started to question something I'd accepted without thinking. Every time someone said, there's no money for proper wages, for training programs, for adequate staffing levels, I'd nodded along. It sounded reasonable. Everyone said it, so it must be true. But what exactly was there no money for? The people existed. The skills could be taught. The buildings and equipment were there. The elderly residents who needed care certainly existed. The only thing that was rationed was the political willingness to connect these people and resources. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice, wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still seeing the gap between what exists and what gets connected. Every time I pass that care home in Roundhay, or see the empty training rooms at the college, or talk to Sarah about the job she loved but couldn't afford to keep, I understand a bit more clearly that this is not just my story. It's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side, while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare.
What Chloe experienced has a name, logical fallacy. This is when someone makes an argument based on a false comparison that sounds reasonable but breaks down under examination. If I said a goldfish bowl was like the ocean because both contain water, you'd immediately see the flaw. The scale, the environment, the entire ecosystem are completely different. Every time someone told Chloe there is no money, they were making the same false comparison. They were treating the UK government's budget like a household budget because both involve spending money. But the scale, the powers, the entire financial ecosystem are completely different. A household must earn or borrow before it spends. A government that issues its own currency spends first, then collects taxes to control inflation and resource allocation. When the college said the funding just isn't there, they were applying household logic to a currency issuer. When the care home manager said fee rates didn't cover costs, the constraint wasn't the government's ability to create pounds, it was the political decision to limit those pounds. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources, people, skills, materials, time. And in Chloe's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Leeds East ranks 61 out of 543 English constituencies on the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. The constituency has 1,602 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Local organisations receive £34.9 million in total grants tracked by 360 Giving Grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.